Guest is an American author, journalist, and political pundit. He has won 14 Emmy Awards and was a producer, reporter, and correspondent for CBS News for 28 years. I would think it was from 1972 through 2000. He was also a paid contributor to Fox News for about 10 years, from 2009 till 2018. He is best known for his ongoing critiques of journalism practices here in the United States, and he has written a number of books, one of which I reference all the time. It's called Bias. A CBS insider exposes how the media distort the news. We welcome to the show Bernie Goldberg. Bernie, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. Glad to be on with you.
And believe me, it's an absolute privilege for me to have you this morning. It was actually your very first book, Bias was. I know it's a new number one New York Times bestseller. It was your very first book, though, correct?
Yeah, and that does crazy things to you. I have never written a book in my life.
I
read a couple, but I have never written any. And then the very first book goes to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. You know, everything is downhill after that, but it was quite an experience.
I can imagine it was, and I would imagine every subsequent book, it's you're always looking at that threshold of will it be as good and successful as my previous.
Right, but I don't write books anymore because I'd rather stick myself in the eye with a sharp stick.
Oh, come on.
It's really lonely, and I'm never free when I'm writing a book. I'm always thinking about what I'm going to write the next day. So I wrote five. I'm done.
Well, I want to take you back.
I write a column.
I know you do. But I want to take you back to writing Bias. Were you afraid of ruffling some feathers of those that you worked with?
You know, that's a very good question, and I'm going to answer it. I'm going to tell you something that somebody might not have figured out. I've been credited with being incredibly courageous. Writing Bias. And before that, a Wall Street Journal op-ed while I was still with CBS News. I quit to write Bias, so it was took less courage to write it after I quit CBS News.
Well, still.
But I didn't care at that point. I had nothing. I had quit to write the book. It was either going to catch on or it wasn't. And it was something that had been percolating for years and years. I had been complaining about liberal bias at CBS for over a decade. Nothing came of it. And then I quit and wrote the book, and I caught up, Gary. I caught up with the American people.
Yeah.
That's why it was so successful.
You must have heard from a number of your colleagues upon the release of it, some of whom you've mentioned in the book. Were they all surprised? Did they applaud you, or were they appalled with you?
They were appalled. I was called. I'm going to combine both the op-ed and the Wall Street Journal in 1996, while I was with CBS News, and Bias, which came out at the end of 2001. I'm going to combine the two to answer the question.
Okay.
I was literally called a traitor by some of my colleagues. These are people who don't call real traitors a traitor.
Oh, my goodness.
But I was a traitor because I wrote about journalism. And I, since I had been at CBS for 28 years, I saw what was going on behind the scenes that the public never saw.
Mm.
And one of the most important things I wrote, Gary, was that despite what a lot of conservatives think, there's not a conspiracy to get Republicans and conservatives. The problem is groupthink. You put so many liberals in one newsroom, and you're going to get a liberal bias because they don't even think their views are liberal. They think their views are reasonable. They think they're middle of the road, mainstream, and mostly reasonable. Conservative views, on the other hand, they stick out like a sore thumb in America's newsrooms. So, they were not thrilled. They were appalled. One person said, who I worked with and never had a problem with, a producer told a friend of mine, I'll never read that book. They didn't even want to read the book to find out what I wrote. All they knew is that they didn't like it. Well, enough people in America liked it to make it the number one book in the country. So
why,
I'm glad I wrote it.
Why did you feel compelled to write that? You must have known that you, with all of your experience, you knew that you were crossing, you know, I guess, a line, you know, or a line in the sand, that you, crossing over to the other side of it, you'd know, you must have known you'd never be able to go back. That no one would ever hire you after that. Was it worth the risk?
I didn't burn any bridges, Gary. I blew them up. I mean, it was way beyond burning bridges. I blew up those bridges. But I wrote the book because journalism, and I don't want to get too highfalutin here, but journalism is the only profession that's outlined in the Constitution where you get all sorts of privileges but no responsibilities. In other words, you could be unfair on your radio show. You could be unfair. You have no constitutional obligation to be fair. You can't slander somebody or libel somebody. You can't tell people to violently overthrow the government, but you can say anything else you want. And that, so the institution, the journalism institution, is so powerful, it needs to be held accountable. And journalists will look down the throats of politicians, of military people. They'll look down the throat of sports people, of educators, of clergy, church people. But if you look down their throat, they turn on you. And I knew this from complaining about bias over the years in-house. And I just figured I've had enough. And I had no idea, as I say, I had no idea if the book would be successful or not. I had a feeling that I was catching up with the American people. Mm-hmm. But because I had never written a book, I had no idea if it would be successful. And I'm glad it was, because people need to know. Look, most people, if you took a poll today, journalism has a very low credibility rating.
They do. You're right. It absolutely does.
Right. I mean, you know, it's down there with used car dealers and, you know, funeral director and all that stuff. And there's a reason they have a low credibility rating, because people don't believe them. That's what credibility means.
But how did journalism get so off track from reporting news objectively?
You see, that's a real good question. And it's a complicated question. People got more and more political. Look, I think when we started a move to diversify the newsroom, and that's a good thing. We needed more minority people. We needed more women. That's a good thing. But we never were concerned about diversity of opinion. So the more black people and Hispanic people and Asian people and women people, if I could put it that way, that were hired, the more left the newsroom became. Because those groups, generally speaking, tend to be more liberal than conservative. Mm-hmm. So the newsroom became more and more liberal, and for some reason, editors and producers and executives didn't keep people in line. It just became, well, everybody's for this, everybody's against that. Well, no, everybody wasn't for this and against that. Just the liberals in the newsroom were for this or against that. The rest of the country wasn't, and they noticed, and that's why the credibility. And whenever you criticize journalists, what they have a tendency to circle the wagons. I said, I've had enough. So I wrote the book, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Is there any objective journalism in either cable television or network television or even in print at all? Does it remain? Is there any objective journalism at all anymore?
It's worse than when I wrote the book almost 20 years ago. That's one thing. And cable has made it worse. Largely, cable has made it worse. Not exclusively, but largely. Mm-hmm. Let's take CNN. CNN used to be a really solid news organization. Bureaus all over the world, you know. you didn't want to compete against CNN because they were there before you got off the plane to cover the story. CNN now is all anti-Trump all the time. Now, I'm not a defender of Donald Trump. I don't like it. I don't like the things he says and does. Forget about his policies. That's something else. But CNN has hard news reporters who give their opinions all the time. You should never know, and when I say you, I'm talking about the people listening to us right now, mm-hmm. you should never know how a hard news reporter, how the White House correspondent, for instance, feels about any political issue. You should never know that. I know how Jim Acosta, of the White House correspondent for CNN, feels about all sorts of issues because he tells us. He says things that would never be tolerated at CBS News when I was there, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and into 2000. You'd lose your job if you said the things that Jim Acosta routinely says. And I'm just picking him out as one
sure.
pretty good example. So,
but what was it?
It's worse. The short answer is it's worse. Cable is a big reason it's worse.
Well, number one, people can't differentiate between a pundit and a true reporter. People will look at somebody like either Tucker Carlson or Rachel Maddow or Anderson Cooper, you know, at three different cable news networks and look at them as journalists and reporters. While they may have a background in journalism, maybe when they were in college or whatnot, they are strictly political pundits. They're slanted to and by there's that word again, biased towards their network and what their network opinion happens to be.
Right. And I'm okay with that to an extent. I'll tell you to what extent I'm not okay with it in a second. Opinion people are entitled to their opinions. So all the people you right. mentioned are entitled to their opinions. Okay, let's put that aside. Hard news reporters are different. And sometimes this is a problem. Sometimes when I watch cable, I don't know if I'm watching an opinion show or a news show.
It's true.
Now think about that.
Yeah.
You should know the difference, and the line is often blurred. Now, that said, here's the part about opinion shows I don't like. Even opinion people have to be fair. So let's use Fox as an example, but all three in terms of opinion, I'm no fan of any of the three. Let's take Fox as an example. If you're going to criticize Barack Obama for doing something specific, but not criticize Donald Trump when he does something just like it, that's not fair, mm-hmm. and that's not acceptable to me. If you're at CNN or MSNBC and you praise Barack Obama for doing something, but criticize Donald Trump when he does something just like it, that's not fair either. That's why I basically stopped watching cable news, at least the opinion part.
Yeah.
I wish we had sports because I'd rather watch even a bad basketball game than listen to this Trump bashing on two of the networks, and Trump could literally shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they'd support him on the other network. So I've reached my breaking point with cable opinion shows.
Folks, we're talking to Bernie Goldberg. He has written a book many years ago called Bias, a CBS insider exposes how the media distorts the news. You can also check out his website, too, at bernardgoldberg.com. What do you think, Bernie, what do you think it will take for a newscast to regain the trust that it once had with its viewers? How do they even accomplish that?
The short answer is, I don't know. The slightly longer answer is I'm not sure it's even possible at this point. I wrote bias. This isn't bias. This is corruption of journalism. This is rooting for Trump to be thrown out of office or rooting for him to stay in office no matter what he does. That may be wrong. This is way beyond bias. And you reach a point in any relationship, whether it's with a news channel or with a man or a woman, where you don't trust them anymore.
Yeah, sadly.
And I don't know what can be done to bring things back to normal or what used to be normal? It's a great question, but I'm going to be honest with you. I just don't know, and I'm not sure at all sure we haven't crossed the line where it isn't going to be right anymore.
So you don't foresee it even happening?
I can't picture it right now. When I wrote Bias, I spoke to, the museum in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It's a museum dedicated to news.
Yep.
Anyway, they brought in high school kids from all over the place. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of high school kids. And one young girl stood up and said, why don't they just announce their bias in advance? And one channel will be openly biased in one liberal and one would be openly biased conservative. And newspapers, the same thing. I said, I don't want that to happen. I just want them to fix the problem. That was 20 years ago. She may have been onto something.
Yeah.
That may be the only way out of this mess, where you say, we are a conservative channel. We make no pretenses on being fair. We are just going to be conservative. And we're a liberal channel, and we're going to do the same thing. That to me is total surrender, but it may be, it's a solution being thrown around these days, not just by, I mean, this was a high school kid,
yeah,
20 years
ago. Pretty perceptive.
She was,
yeah,
what was she, 17 years old or yeah. something? Now, I mean, one of my former bosses, the president of CBS News, Van Gordon Sauter, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal a week or so ago in which he says something just like that. So it's an idea who's gaining some traction.
What?
Just announce that you're biased, that you're
right.
not going to be down the middle, that you're not going to even be fair necessarily, and then go about your business. I hate that, but it may come to pass.
Bernie, what was it, or when was it, that you noticed that the bias has become so blatant that you knew you couldn't do it anymore and you had to write a book to expose it? Was there an event
Actually, when I wrote the book, cable was not a factor at all. So it was far, I mean, what I wrote was mild compared to what goes on today.
Yeah, well.
But when I noticed, to answer your question, when I noticed that it had gone over the edge, that's really when cable came about. Cable is not a model of journalism. Cable news is not a model of journalism. It is a business model. And the business model is very simple to understand. Give the audience what it wants to hear. Throw them red meat so they'll come back for more. Validate the opinions they already hold. Don't make them uncomfortable by giving them opinions they don't want to hear. Now, that's not journalism.
No, but you're saying
that's
people don't.
Business.
You're saying people want that. I think people want balanced journalism.
Gary, I think people, the audience, is the unindicted co-conspirator in all of this. I think they're the ones who want it, and cable news are the ones who are giving it to them. I don't think, you know, people. A lot of people say to me personally, I just want fair news and all that. And
right.
I think there are people like that. But I think there are a lot of people who don't want both sides at all.
Well,
you could watch prime time on any of the three cable networks between 8 and 11 Eastern time and not get an opposing opinion from the conservative point of view or the liberal point of view, meaning you won't hear people on Fox criticizing Donald Trump, by and large, and you won't hear people on CNN or MSNBC giving him credit, even if he found a cure for cancer.
Well, Fox News is changing a little bit, though. They've become a little bit more moderate over the last couple of years.
Well, Fox News, unlike the other two, has a solid news organization. I don't know what the politics are of the chief White House correspondent on Fox News. John Roberts never lets on how he feels about it. But I do know what Jim Acosta's politics are.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Fox News, unlike CNN, has a solid news part of its organization. The news part, I have no problem.
And let's not just pick on cable news. I mean, even network news has become just as bad. You wrote a follow-up to Bias a couple of years later called Arrogance, Rescuing America from the Media Elite. Just briefly, if people think you blew the lid off of it in Bias, you go a little bit deeper into Arrogance, don't you?
Yeah, and the title answers the question. The title explains everything. These people are arrogant. They don't respect their audience. They say, if anybody out there listening to us has ever written a letter to a network saying, I saw this on your newscast the other day, and I think that this was unfair, and here's why. Mm-hmm. A perfectly reasonable comment. Don't throw it in the garbage can. They're arrogant.
Yeah.
You can't call up and speak to anybody who's going to take your criticism seriously. There's no mechanism for that. So if you're in a position where you can say just about anything you want, and as long as you say what your audience wants to hear, you're not going to get into any trouble, you become arrogant.
Yeah, it's true.
You become powerful, and the power makes you arrogant. And that bothers me. I don't like people in power using that power to get away with stuff they shouldn't be able to get away with. You know, I don't want to sound like Mother Teresa here. But
I agree. A lot of people would agree with you.
As much as anything else.
Bernie, you also have a book titled 100 People Who Are Screwing Up America. In it, you mention Michael Moore and Al Sharpton, rapper Eminem. Al Franken is number 37, as you mentioned on the cover. Who would we be surprised to learn is also listed in this book?
Well, by the way, the book held up when it came out. People who are on the list might not be on the list today.
Oh, okay.
You know, all these years later. By the way, Al Franken was number 37.
Right.
Because Casey Stengel, the famous New York Yankees manager, was number 37. And Casey Stengel spoke gibberish. Casey Stengel once said at spring training to his players, line up in alphabetical order according to height. You know, so Casey Stengel never made sense. And I figured, well, neither does Al Franken. So I'll make him number 37.
Oh, my goodness.
But there were some news people on the list. It was my second biggest book, but maybe my least favorite, because I don't like going after people as individuals. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
You know, Bernie, we're running out of time, and I've got one last question for you. You wrote in chapter 6, actually, in Bias, it has such a profound influence on me, so I know this book very well. I've read it a couple of times, as I mentioned, that human tragedy and pandemics make great news stories. Why do you think that is?
Because when the plane lands safely or when the bank doesn't get robbed, it isn't news. News is something dramatic and out of the ordinary. The reason, I mean, we're covering these riots for a couple of reasons. One, it's important to cover them because they're important news events. But make no mistake, fires at night make great television. I mean, I know that sounds cynical and maybe even shallow, but if you can have orange flames at night, people will watch. Mm. So people don't watch good things as much as they watch bad things. The very nature of news is not about one good thing happening after another, but mostly one bad thing happening after another. Wonderful. Pandemics are legitimate news, but they're also stuff that glue people to their television set until they get tired of the pandemic. Riots are another thing that glue people to the television set. And since everything is about ratings and money,
give the people what they want, right?
Give them what they want, exactly.
Bernard Goldberg. His website is bernardgoldberg.com. Bernie, you were absolutely fantastic, and it's an absolute pleasure to be speaking with you this morning.
Gary, I enjoyed it. Thanks very much for having me on.
I look forward. Maybe you'll join us in the future. I would love that.
Sure.
My pleasure. You have a great day, and we're coming
you
right
too.
Back.